Welcome to Hakol Radio's Top 3 segment, where we discuss the top 3 news stories of the day. Hakol Radio, powered by the Muncie Mavasser and broadcasting live from Schlurko Studios in Muncie, New York. Number 1.
Fifty-six Democratic members of the U.S. Congress have penned a letter to U.S. President Joe Biden and U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, calling on them to withhold the transfer of offensive arms to Israel following the deaths of World Central Kitchen workers earlier this month. Announcing the move on social media, Representative Mark Pocan, a Democrat from Wisconsin, wrote, quote, "Big news. Our letter to withhold offensive arms transfers to Israel picked up steam today. We added 16 signers for our final push. 56 members of Congress total. A shift is underway." The Israeli airstrike that killed 7 WCK aid workers, including an American citizen, was absolutely horrifying and unacceptable, Pocan wrote. "Today, I called on the Biden administration to withhold offensive arms transfer to Israel with Representative McGovern, Jack Schakowsky, and 37 other colleagues." The event occurred on April 1st, 2024, during an operation to transfer humanitarian aid from the WCK to the Gaza Strip. An initial investigation found that the forces identified a gunman on one of the aid trucks, following which they identified an additional terrorist. After the vehicles left the warehouse where the aid had been unloaded, one of the commanders mistakenly assumed that the terrorists were located inside the accompanying vehicles and that these were Hamas terrorists. The forces did not identify the vehicles in question as being associated with WCK. Following a misidentification by the forces, the IDF targeted the 3 WCK vehicles based on the misclassification of the event and misidentification of the vehicles as having Hamas operatives inside of them, with the resulting strike leading to the deaths of 7 innocent humanitarian aid workers. IDF troops are continuing to operate in the central Gaza Strip, and they killed a number of terrorists over the past day. During a close quarters encounter, IDF troops killed a terrorist cell that posed a threat to troops on the ground. Over the past day, IDF fighter jets and aircraft struck dozens of terror targets in the Gaza Strip, including military sites, launchers, tunnel shafts, and infrastructure. In one of the strikes, an IDF aircraft also struck a Hamas terrorist cell that posed a threat to IDF troops operating in the area. On Tuesday, April 9th, a launch was identified from Jabalia toward Kibbutz Kfar Aza that was intercepted by the IDF aerial defense array. In response, an IDF fighter jet struck the compound and launcher from which the launch was fired. In addition, a number of launchers were identified toward IDF troops operating in the area of Shejaya in the northern Gaza Strip. In response, IDF fighter jets struck the launcher from which the launchers were fired, killing all the terrorists. On Wednesday morning, April 10th, the German network ARD published an investigation showing that it is, quote, reasonable to consider that engineering material and knowledge from Germany to build civilian infrastructure in Gaza was ultimately used by Hamas to build their terror tunnels. Right under the nose of the Germans, Hamas managed to take advantage of the humanitarian aid and use it to strengthen their infrastructure. Despite strict supervision rules that aimed at avoiding this, ARD adds that they found no suspicion of malice on the part of the involved German companies. Khan News reported that German aid to Gaza included vast amounts of materials to be used for civil infrastructure, but Hamas took advantage and found, quote, dual use for materials such as pipes, sewer rings, steel, and cement. ARD reached its conclusion based on 150 pages of files released by the Federal Office for Economic Cooperation, obtained through the Freedom of Information Act, which were discussed with many engineers for civil and rocket building projects. A report suggests that Israeli officials attribute the potential breakdown of hostage negotiations in Cairo to the withdrawal of forces from Khan Yunis and the increased flow of humanitarian aid into the Gaza Strip. They argue that these actions have emboldened Hamas, reducing the likelihood of any compromise in the talks. As reported by the Ynet news site, authorities in Jerusalem believe these steps have adversely affected the bargaining process, basically giving all the cards to Hamas. Israeli sources are quoted as saying, quote, "We relinquished our significant leverage for nothing," leading to a more intransigent stance from Hamas. The group is now more steadfast in its demands for ending the conflict and withdrawing troops, and is seen as attempting to manipulate the negotiation mediators. On Tuesday, April 9th, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken stated that Israel had not informed the U.S. of a precise timeline for initiating a significant offensive in Rafah, a city in southern Gaza. Blinken emphasized ongoing communications between American and Israeli officials, aiming to minimize civilian casualties and any potential military action. This statement came in the wake of Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu's declaration that an invasion of Rafah was scheduled. Rafah is home to approximately 1.4 million Palestinians, many of whom have been displaced from other areas of Gaza. The U.S., Israel's principal ally, has expressed concerns over a ground invasion of Rafah, calling for a well-defined strategy to safeguard civilians. Israeli Defense Minister Yoav Gallant, in a conversation with U.S. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin, clarified that no specific date for such an operation had been determined, countering Netanyahu's earlier announcement of a fixed date. In a testimony before Congress on Tuesday, Austin remarked that U.S. efforts to persuade Israel to enhance humanitarian support to Gaza were bearing fruit, noting observable positive changes. During a Senate Armed Services Committee hearing, Austin expressed optimism about the continuation of these improvements, highlighting the noticeable increase in humanitarian aid flowing into Gaza. Representative Mike Lawler expressed strong disapproval regarding Biden's proposal for a ceasefire that doesn't also demand the release of hostages. Lawler criticized the administration for what he said are efforts to placate those sympathetic to Hamas in a bid to secure electoral support in Michigan and Minnesota.
Number 2.
Russia and Kazakhstan have initiated the evacuation of over 100,000 individuals due to unprecedented flooding caused by rapidly melting snow, marking the worst such event in the region in over 7 decades. The sudden surge of meltwater inundated numerous communities in the Ural Mountains, Siberia, and other areas of Kazakhstan, adjacent to rivers including the Ural and Tobol. Officials reported these rivers reached record heights within hours. The Ural River, one of Europe's longest rivers that flows through Russia and Kazakhstan to the Caspian Sea, breached a dam near Orsk, located just south of the Ural Mountains, resulting in significant flooding. Further downstream, Orenburg, a city with a population of approximately 550,000 people, faced critical water levels as sirens warned of major flooding risks, with water levels nearing 9.3 meters. Currently, it's at 9.14 meters. Evacuation sirens sounding in Kurgan, situated on the Tobol River, urging residents to leave immediately. An emergency declaration was also made in Timan, a significant oil-producing area in western Siberia known for being the world's largest hydrocarbon basin. Kremlin spokesperson Dmitry Peskov acknowledged the ongoing crisis, indicating that the situation might worsen in the Kurgan and Timan regions due to the volume of incoming water. Russian President Vladimir Putin has been in communication with Kazakhstan's President Kasym-Jomart Tokayev, where flooding has prompted the evacuation of over 86,000 people. Tokayev suggested that this flooding could be the most severe the country has faced in 80 years, affecting regions such as Atyrau, Aktobe, Akmola, Kostanay, eastern Kazakhstan, northern Kazakhstan, and Pavlodar, many of which are located along rivers that flow from Russia. The situation in Orsk, Russia, escalated as frustrated citizens demanded action from President Putin, expressing their dissatisfaction with local authorities' response to the flood by chanting, quote, "Shame on you."
Number 3.
New York City Mayor Eric Adams stood firm in his support for Israel amid escalating calls for a ceasefire in Gaza and continuous protests throughout the city during a city hall meeting with Jewish media representatives before Pesach. Adams emphasized his commitment to standing up for all communities, recalling support for Muslims and other groups targeted, such as during the rise of Islamophobia after 9/11. Despite criticizing the loss of innocent lives since the conflict's onset, Adams has refrained from urging Israel to limit its actions in Gaza, reiterating his stance and advocating for the return of hostages, the dismantling of Hamas, and the protection of innocent lives across all borders. Unlike other cities with substantial Jewish and Muslim populations, New York City has not officially called for a ceasefire, though a minority of city council members advocate for an end to the conflict. In his engagements around the city, Mayor Adams consistently highlights the necessity for Hamas to release hostages and for Israel to counter the terrorist group, echoing sentiments that resonate with Israelis and supporters of Israel, especially following his post-attack speech in solidarity with Israel. Moreover, Adams addressed the concerning rise in anti-Semitic incidents in New York City, underlining his commitment to ensuring the safety and security of all city residents against hate crimes and intimidation, particularly within Jewish communities. The NYPD reported a significant increase in anti-Semitic incidents and overall hate crimes, emphasizing the urgency of addressing these issues for the city's well-being. Starting Friday, April 12th, young residents of Newark, New Jersey will be subjected to a new curfew, as announced by Mayor Ras Baraka and Public Safety Director Fritz Farage. The curfew is part of the Juvenile Safety Initiative launched by Newark Police, aimed at keeping minors safe by ensuring they are supervised by a parent or guardian during nighttime hours. The initiative emphasizes the responsibility of parents for their children's safety and welfare, while also highlighting the Newark Police's division's dedication to safeguarding young people from crime and harm. Under the curfew ordinance, minors aged 17 and under will need to be within 100 yards of their homes between 11 p.m. and 5:30 a.m., unless accompanied by an adult. Mayor Baraka stressed the importance of children being safe and supervised at night, noting that the streets are not the safest environment after dark. The initiative seeks to limit situations where young people might be exposed to potential dangers. Director Farage pointed out the risks associated with the late hours when fewer adults are available to watch over the children. He called for community cooperation with the curfew ordinance as part of the broader effort to increase police patrols and enhance safety in the neighborhoods. The goal is to diminish the likelihood of minors becoming involved in or affected by criminal activities.
Thanks for tuning in to the Top 3 segment live on Hakol Radio, and have a great day.